So good morning, everybody. So my name is Nathan. I am one of the pastors here at The River, and welcome to the first week of a new series we are calling Faith Without a Script. And this is one of my favorite kind of series because it's a series where we get to spend several weeks looking at the stories of Jesus. So throughout the series, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be exploring what it means to follow Jesus when there is no clear plan. There's no predictable outcome. There's no guarantee of comfort. Because one thing that becomes really clear the more and more that you read the Gospels is Jesus does not follow our scripts. So as we're going to be saying scripts a lot, what is our script? Well, our script is what we write for God when we decide ahead of time what faithfulness is supposed to look like. So essentially, we decide how God should work and how our story should go, and then we tell God how to do it. So today what we're going to be doing is we're going to be looking at three stories where Jesus interrupts people's scripts. And to be clear, these are not bad people. They don't even have bad motives. They are genuinely people trying to do the right thing. They've just already decided what the right thing is before going to God. So let's start with the first story. This is Luke 10. And what I'd really love for you to be able to do is, as you hear this, try to live it out in real time. I know these are all going to be familiar stories. Just pretend like you're there in the moment watching this all unfold. All right, Luke 10, verse 38. As Jesus and the disciples continued on their way to Jerusalem, they came to a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. Now, her sister Mary, she was sitting at the Lord's feet. She's listening to what he taught. But Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing. Okay, so far so good. Jesus comes to visit two sisters, Mary and Martha. Now, you need to remember that Jesus wasn't just some random schmo. Like, he is mega levels of famous. There are thousands of people who are following him everywhere. So having Jesus at your house, it's kind of a big deal. So if somebody important was coming to your house, a celebrity, a dignitary, what would you do? You would start vacuuming. You'd be dusting. You'd be hiding the clutter in a random room. You would be panic cleaning the master bathroom even though nobody's going to use it. That's Martha. She wants everything just right. Why? Because she cares about Jesus. She cares deeply, and that's not a bad thing. Like, Martha wants Jesus to feel welcomed and loved and like she has it all together. But while Martha is busy preparing everything, Mary, she's just sitting there, sitting with Jesus, listening to some teaching. Meanwhile, Martha's peeking out of the kitchen. And she is slowly getting angrier and angrier. She's sitting there and she's thinking, I am doing all the work while Mary just sits there. If it weren't for me, everybody in this room would starve. Why doesn't she care as much as I care? And eventually, Martha reaches her boiling point and she bursts into the room and she says, Jesus, Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister is just sitting there while I do all the work? Jesus, here's what you're going to do. You tell her to come and help me. And honestly, I think most of us understand Martha. She is responsible. She is carrying the load. She is trying so hard. And to her, it doesn't seem like anybody really cares as much as she does. So Martha gets to the point where she is telling Jesus what to do. And I would guess she is fully prepared for Jesus to validate her script. To be like, oh man, Mary, come on, Martha is right. Why would you leave your poor sister to do all of the work? You know, Mary, if you really cared, you'd help her out more. But instead, Jesus turns to her and he says, my dear Martha, I see that you are worried and that you're upset over all these little details. But there's only one thing that's worth truly being concerned about. Mary has discovered it. That's not going to be taken away from her. And this is where Jesus takes Martha's perfectly typed script and just rips it in half. Because Martha thinks faithfulness means productivity. It means managing things really well. It means keeping everything under control, you know, for Jesus. But Jesus tells her, no, you're so focused on doing things for me that you're no longer actually listening to me. Meanwhile, Mary has discovered something deeper. She's listening to Jesus. She's paying attention. She is staying close to Jesus and instead of trying to manage the moment. And I'd say, this is still our temptation. I know it's mine. Like, I want to control the outcomes of my life. We want stable families. We want organized jobs. We want a growing church. And man, we really just want everyone to be happy. So we start writing our scripts. You know, if I work hard enough, everything will be okay. If I plan carefully enough, I think I can hold everything together. But Jesus keeps reminding people, control is not the goal. He is. And listening to Jesus, unfortunately, doesn't always mean we get a detailed 5-year plan. Sometimes it really means us just having enough light that we can take the next step. And for me, this sermon series is my life. So as a transitional pastor, you can probably guess that stability is usually not in my job description. Like, I don't know becomes a phrase in my everyday vocabulary. I was thinking about this recently. New Year's is always weird for me because our script is so blank that at the beginning of most years, Jenny and I don't know where we'll end up living by the end of it. Every single year. Big city, small town, north, south, east, west, conservative, progressive, traditional, modern, like anything in between. I don't know what issues I'm going to be walking into. I don't know how long those issues are going to take to walk through. I don't know whether the people of the church are going to accept us or reject us. That's just the start of things that I don't know every single year. Our script is very page by page. So in leading, one of the biggest things that I've had to learn to say to churches that I work with is, I don't know. And that can get pretty uncomfortable. People naturally, like, they're bringing you in, they want their leader, especially when things are uncertain, to be the one with certainty. They want timelines, they want plans, they want guarantees that the church will go exactly the way that their script says it should. And when things don't go according to that script, you can guess where they point their frustration. But transitional ministry, it often means leading through uncertainty. It means more often than not saying, I don't know. Because I don't always have the full script. But I have learned to trust the one who does. And actually, a couple of weeks ago, we had our youth takeover. And we had a student who walked through something very similar. And immediately at the end of the service, I was like, can you come do this for my sermon in a couple of weeks? And she was like, I guess. So what I'm going to do before we continue, I'd love for Evelyn to come up and share a little bit about her story. Yeah, sure.
All right. Hello, I am Evelyn. I'm 15 and 5'6 years old, and I'm finishing up my 10th grade year. So I have a question for you. Have you ever had someone in your life who is just your person, the one who you go through everything with? I do. My best friend since first grade, Gabby, and I have dealt with distance, time zones from the Philippines, and many life changes. She is my constant and my best friend, yet in this past month, we've experienced more change than consistency. One night last month, she called me crying. Things at home were falling apart. There's financial struggles, she was missing school, and just experiencing overall feelings of loneliness and worry. My parents and I picked her up, and she stayed with us that night, just a fun sleepover. However, what started as one night that week soon became more, and soon she was staying with us, with no idea for how long. There were options for her, but none were clear, and only one was a best-case scenario, that she would stay nearby. However, it was developing quicker and firmer that she may have to move across the state, across the country, or back across the world. And all we could do was take it one day at a time. So I prayed, a lot. I prayed for her stability and for her safety, and I prayed that she could stay with us forever. But deep down, I knew that I couldn't control the situation in the way that I wanted to. So instead, I just prayed that wherever she ended up, she would be safe, and that God would take care of her. But I'm a planner, so this felt extremely out of my control. And just a week into her planned two-week stay, we found out abruptly that she would be leaving to stay temporarily with her sister the next day. And that night, it all hit me. School stress, life stress, and the reality that my best friend might be moving anywhere at any time. I was overwhelmed and scared. Scared that, like every other best friend that I had had, Gabby would move away and just disappear from my life. And sure, she was my best friend, but she was also the only one I saw on a regular basis that still lived close. And so I went to my parents, crying and seeking comfort because I just couldn't shoulder it myself anymore. And in the midst of my fear and worry, my mom asked me a question. What if God has placed you in people's lives for a season on purpose? So what, could he place me in their lives for a little longer? It did make me think, though, that maybe I had something from him that he wanted me to share with them for that season, especially to those who might be going through a similar time. And I realized in that moment that maybe faith isn't about holding on tightly to what I know and want to be, but it's trusting in God and his provision that he knows what he's doing, even when I have no clue. Later, Gabby came in, and we invited her in. We just sat and cried together with all of the emotions and thoughts from the past week that we had never directly shared with each other. There was no pretending to be strong or to have the answers. We just sat in the honesty of the fear and uncertainty that we shared. And that ability to just be helped me feel better. Not because we suddenly had the answers, but because we knew we didn't have to. The next day, Gabby packed up and left to stay with her sister. And again, I didn't know what would happen next. But I did know that she was okay, that God was with her, and sometimes that's all that can be. Fast forward to now, her brothers made plans to move out to San Jose so she can stay at school and with her friends. So things are looking up. But even so, through it all, I did feel lost, and I felt like things were just gonna keep going down, and I didn't know what I was gonna do. And yeah, sometimes I still feel lost, and I don't always know where things are going, but I know what I'm going to do. I'm gonna keep hoping. And I'm gonna hope even if it gets my hopes up, because when I lose that hope, that's when I get lost. But all I have to do is remember that just as God provides for the birds of the air or the lilies of the field, he will provide for us. Thank you.
Told you, that was so great. When I heard that, I'm like, that's what I'm talking about. So, yeah, she got to share that with the 9 o'clock a couple of weeks ago. I really wanted you guys to also be able to hear the story. And what I love about it is, it really shows us that sometimes following God looks less like certainty and more like staying close enough to Jesus that when he changes directions, we notice. One of the interesting parts about this story, I looked in the other Gospels, and we never actually find out how Martha responds to the moment. Maybe she was humbled. Maybe she was confused. Maybe she straight up just lost it and started yelling at Jesus. I don't know. But what Jesus exposes in Martha is something that he keeps exposing in us over and over again. That we all tend to build faith around the things that we feel like we can control. For Martha, it was productivity. For the next man, it's something else entirely. This is Luke 18. That once there was a religious leader And he came up and he asked Jesus a question. Good teacher. What should I do to inherit eternal life? Now, this is the evangelism scenario that we all dream of. Like, a guy just walks up to you and is like, hey, excuse me, what do I need to do to inherit eternal life? You're like, wow, that's a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. So let's see what Jesus says. He says, well, why do you call me good? Only God is truly good, which is such a Jesus answer and something I'd love to do a whole separate sermon on, but we don't have time for that. But to answer your question, you know the commandments. Don't commit adultery, don't murder, don't steal, don't testify falsely, honor your father and mother. And the man replies, cool, I've obeyed these commandments since I was young. Now, much like Martha, this man already has a script. He's asking the question, but he kind of already feels like he knows the answer. And by most standards, he really is just straight up crushing it. He's moral, he is disciplined, he is respected. He's the guy at church that everybody points at and says, perfect Christian. And from his perspective, this moment is going great. Like, I feel like I can hear the confidence in his voice when he basically is like, Jesus, nailed it. I'm doing all the things. I follow the rules. I stay faithful. I go to church every single week. And I think a lot of us can understand this mindset. I'm a box checker. I'm a planner. So I like faithfulness to be measurable. Because when it's measurable, I can make it into a script. I can do a checklist. And I think this guy looks at it. He's nailed the checklist. And he's like, cool, thanks, Jesus. I'll see you later. And in my mind, he is kind of like walking away with his chest jutted out when verse 22, Jesus is like, oh, wait, hold on. Excuse me. There's one other thing that you haven't done. I'm going to need you to sell all of your possessions and give the money to the poor. And you'll have treasures in heaven. But then you can come and follow me. But when the man heard this, he became very sad, for he had many possessions. And this is where the story again becomes uncomfortable for us. Because Jesus is identifying the things that we can't imagine surrendering. And once again, not because possessions are evil. That's not the point. It's what possessions can represent to him and they represent to us. They become our security. They become our comfort and our stability. And yeah, we're fine with sacrificing a little bit. Maybe even enough to just kind of hurt a tiny bit so we can feel good. But what about the things that make us feel safe? What about the things that help us feel in control of our lives? Because really, there's a difference between like, oh, I sacrificed, and sacrifice. And I read this story a ton of times this week, and the more I looked at it, the more I'm like, you know, Jesus isn't actually trying to ruin this guy's life. He's exposing the thing that the man trusts more than he trusts God. You see, the man says, what can I do to inherit eternal life? But he also kind of wants to keep the version of his life that he already built. But one of the things we have to realize is following Jesus is not just adding him in to our life that we already planned. It's us dropping our plan and following his. And that's really where both of these stories connect to each other. That Martha trusted her productivity and control. And the rich man, he trusted his stability and his comfort. So both are trying to follow Jesus, but they're also still holding on to the thing that makes them feel secure. And the desire for security brings us to our final story. This is Matthew 16. So Jesus begins telling his disciples very plainly that it's going to be necessary for him to go to Jerusalem, that he's going to suffer many terrible things while he's there at the hands of the elders, the leading priests, and the teachers of religious law. that he is going to be killed. But on the third day, he's going to raise from the dead. Now we're towards the end of Jesus' ministry. The disciples have been with him for years at this point. Unlike the rich man, they have left everything behind. They left their old lives. And because they did that, they have got to watch miracles happen. They've got to see people's lives radically changed. So from their perspective, things are going pretty well. And then out of the blue, Jesus starts talking about suffering and rejection and talking about his death. So if you were one of the disciples, you've been with Jesus, you love Jesus, you're living this out in real time. Everything is going really well. And all of a sudden, your friend starts talking like that. How would you feel? What would you do? I'm going to guess you would probably do something like this. Verse 22, that Peter takes Jesus aside and he begins to reprimand him, saying things like, Jesus, heaven forbid, you've got to stop talking like this. This is not going to happen to you. Because the thing is, sometimes we get so committed to our script that when God tells us something, we try to correct him. And that's what Peter does here. Jesus explains where things are going, and Peter responds, Jesus, I love you and everything, but clearly you don't understand the script. So let's pause, and I'll explain to you how the script's actually going to go. And honestly, I really, truly, sincerely, I believe Peter means well here. Because Peter clearly loves Jesus. Peter believes in Jesus, in who he is and what he can do. And because of that, he wants to protect the thing that has changed his life. I think we can understand that instinct. We want to protect the things we love. Our families, our jobs, our church, the things that make us feel safe. So when something threatens those things, whew, our instinct is to step in and preserve them at all costs. Which is why Jesus' response to Peter is completely shocking. That Jesus turns to Peter and says, "You get away from me, Satan. And you are a dangerous trap to me." I've heard this verse a million times, but this week it really resonated in me. Like, can you imagine Jesus looking you in the eye and saying this to you? I was just like, man, I would feel gutted. Because from Peter's perspective, he's doing the loyal and protective thing. But while Peter thinks he is protecting Jesus, he's actually resisting the very mission of Jesus. And that's the tragedy of the moment, is Peter's love is real, but he's operating from his own script, which is why Jesus has to say, Peter, you have to understand, you are seeing things merely from your human point of view, not from God's. I feel like that line explains all three stories. Because from a human point of view, all three of them make sense. Martha's productivity makes sense. The rich man's security, that makes sense. Peter protecting what he loves makes complete and total sense. But Jesus keeps asking us a deeper question. Will you still follow me when I lead you somewhere that doesn't make sense? And like Martha, Jesus invites us to be still and listen through prayer, through scripture, through godly counsel. Because as we listen to God, we will loosen our grip on the version of the story we're trying so hard to preserve. Because in one sense, yeah, Peter was right. Jesus' death was horrifying, and it really tore him up. But Peter was also wrong, because without Jesus' death, there is no resurrection. And without the resurrection, there is no church. You see, Peter thought he was saving the script, but what he didn't realize was God is writing a way bigger one. One that gives us a hope and a future. One that leads us deeper and into much more beautiful things than anything that we could have ever written on our own. So as we move into a time of reflection, I want us to sit with this idea of scripts. Because, I mean, we all have them. We have scripts of how we think our lives should go and what our future's supposed to look like. But as we're finding, following Jesus always has moments where the path forward gets a little fuzzy, where we don't get the full plan. All we get is an invitation. Come, trust me, follow me. So that's going to lead us to a couple of questions for us to take some time and reflect on. When God changes your script, how do you tend to respond? I wrote a couple of things that are fairly common: anxiety or control, fear, overworking, protection, prayer, trust, etc., etc. But what's your thing that you go to? Second, where might God be asking you to trust him without having all the answers first? And finally, how does God give you hope even when the future feels unclear? So we're going to take a couple of minutes to process those, and then I'll come up and I'll close this in prayer.